It's 10 o'clock. We'll call a Rancho Murrieta Community Services District Security Committee meeting to order. Director Tim Mabey could not be here today, so we'll move on to item number two, comments from the public. And let me say thank you for the public attendance here. Are there any comments not on the agenda? Items are not on the agenda. Yes, please approach. We now have our microphone fixed. Yay.
Testing?
Yes.
I read Gail's article in the River Valley Times about...
Richard, just for the record, state name.
Okay, Richard Gears.
Thank you.
Just for the record, you can't require that in a public meeting. You can't require the public to identify themselves.
I'm sorry, thank you, yes. I mean, everybody knows you, so yeah.
Okay. I read Gail's article in the River Valley Times about the APDI software, and I kind of went home, and I have a question for Jeff.
One of the things it said was the Florida company provides the software for the district database containing resident addresses, phone numbers, registered vehicles, guest lists, and optional information about pets.
I live in Murrieta Village. Am I in that database?
If you're listed as a resident or occupant of the house, yes.
I am? And yes. Why is that? And first of all, where do you get that information from?
Well,
application.
Yeah, ABDI is the program you're talking about, which is the program the district has had for over 10 years now. It's the residential database. So anytime anybody moves into the district, there's paperwork that's filled out.
Okay.
And then a copy of that is provided to us. And then it's attached to that residential address or lot number.
Yes.
So it shows the current occupants of that address. It's mainly comes into play behind the gates because mm-hmm. vehicles are registered to that house or on that account, and then the barcodes are attached to that, so it shows the barcode number assigned to that vehicle, those types of okay. things. But it's any address in the district, so okay. the businesses are in there too.
Okay. You know, that surprises me. I realize you're not a police department, but if there was any police department within United States had a database containing all residents, I'd be very surprised, and I think there would be an outrage concerning that. If I wanted to be deleted from your database, would you do that?
Don't know. We have to look at our code. I don't know if it's optional.
And again, that database strictly applies to gate access to Rancho Murrieta mm-hmm. Association.
Well, like I said, I live in the
right.
I understand.
Village, and yet you're saying that I am in the database.
Okay. Okay. Question noted. All right. Okay. We'll.
And no answer.
I would have to look at your address to see if your name is
okay.
on it.
Okay.
I can't answer that question here. I don't
but
have the
generally
program.
People in Murrieta Village.
The homeowner.
Okay.
And the occupants,
okay. right.
meaning if they're on there as, say, a renter
okay.
or the owner.
Okay.
If you stay at your address or you rent your address, and if whoever owns the property didn't put you on there, then you may not be in there.
Okay.
But I can't answer that without looking at the
okay.
database itself.
One other thing. At some point, I did have a barcode. Would that have added me to the database?
Yes.
And I no longer have a barcode. Are you still in the database?
Possibly.
Okay.
And the barcodes with the village were simply turned off.
Turned off, but not deleted.
If you're a resident, correct.
Okay.
You would still be tied to that address.
Okay. In that case, could I ask for that to be deleted?
Which part?
Anything generated because I had a barcode.
Now, you'll still be in the database. Again, it goes back to the question you asked. I'd have to look to see what's in the code because you're dealing with private residential communities, so as opposed to living in the city. But public safety does have databases, Richard. They do have addresses, phone numbers, people associated with those addresses. They can get it right there in their car. Probably more extensive information that we could have.
Like in Sacramento, County or City,
Do they have a database containing every resident?
Yeah, there's mapping systems. We had it in the...
Talk about the police department.
Yeah, absolutely. Public safety has that information. They get it off, it's public information. If you go to the assessor's office and look up the property address, it's going to tell you who owns that house.
I think what I'm asking, is there a database maintained by the police department?
Absolutely.
Fire department as well.
Yeah, every single address within their jurisdiction is in a database. Every single address.
I'm not talking about the database, their database, which they maintain.
Okay.
Okay, yes. The answer to your question is yes, again.
Yeah, okay, so the...
Police, fire, and ambulance.
The question is understood, and staff will be looking into it. Are there any other comments, questions on items not on the agenda? Okay, then let's move forward to the monthly updates.
One second, please.
Sure.
The first part of the operational update I will defer because it's a topic later on the agenda, but it has to do with the edits to the district security code.
Okay.
And from the past meeting. Some other notes, we have CPR first aid refresher training coming up for all of field operations and patrol, mandatory optional for other staff, and we do have other staff attending that day. Mm-hmm. And then we also have our customer service training coming up in April.
Okay.
A couple incidents of note, they got brought up and discussed at the last meeting, but one had to do with a vehicle accident on Jackson at Murrieta Drive. Three people were injured in that accident. It turned out to be a hit and run driver that walked away from the scene, and the sergeant was on his way to work, stopped at the scene, got a description, found her down here near the Yellow Bridge, got her to turn around and come back. But during the investigation, they, being CHP and talking to her, had determined that something just wasn't quite right with her. Most notably when he just straight up asked her if she'd been drinking. She said, well, that depends, what's today? And then probably. Mm-hmm. And subsequent investigation, she was arrested for driving under the influence, causing bodily injury, and leaving the scene, which were felonies. After the arrival of a second CHP officer, they saw damage to her vehicle not consistent with this accident and determined that she was traveling from Folsom to Jackson via Scott Road. And when they went down Scott Road, they found a scene where she had hit and took out about 200 feet of fence, so they also charged her with that. And the three people in the car were taken to the hospital. They happened to be on their way to the south to do some work at a house. The other issue we briefly talked about was the juveniles drinking out on the little island.
Mm-hmm.
Where one of them became so intoxicated he passed out. And that necessitated a rescue call. Actually, this thing's jumping around on me, sorry.
It's all right. Mm-hmm.
That's why I don't use this. Fire department couldn't get out to the juvenile. They were concerned with the swift water going over the dam and the slippery footing and the cold temperatures, so they had dispatched a helicopter that would be able to land and or do a hoist rescue. But unfortunately, the decision was made, but fortunately it worked out okay. The father of the juvenile decided to go across the river himself. Got his kid woke up enough and aroused that he could drag him back across the river to the paramedics. So just as the helicopter arrived on scene, they canceled the helicopter, put the juvenile in the ambulance, and took him to the hospital for severe alcohol poisoning. It could have been more tragic,
mm-hmm.
for obvious many reasons. But unfortunately, one of the things that stood out to me is there's two kids out there who crossed the river to drink. The second kid went back across the river, got in his golf cart, and went home. and then decided to call the parents and say, oh, by the way, your son's out here passed out, and I couldn't get him to wake up. So there was some delay in reporting all of this to emergency services. But he turned out to be okay.
Okay.
Couple of other things, patrol officer on patrol found a man down on Cantova Lane, elderly male on the sidewalk, village resident. Apparently he just tripped and fell walking his dog and struck his head. So they summoned the fire department, took him to the hospital, and our other patrol officer took the man's dog home, took care of the dog, and then called a family member on behalf of the elderly gentleman to let them know he was in the hospital and the dog was back at the house.
Mm-hmm.
We had another disturbance call. Patrol unknown circumstances arrived and had determined that it was ended up being a domestic. They called for SSD to respond. The wife and daughter were in fear of their safety, so patrol didn't feel safe leaving them alone and stood by to keep them safe until SSD arrived. And in that case, the male was arrested for domestic violence.
Okay.
That's it. We have the joint security meeting scheduled and set for March 25th, 10 a.m. here in this building. The agenda is in draft form under review. As soon as it's finalized, we'll be publishing that.
Okay. And, you know, comment, are there any public questions, comments on those items? I'm just going to make a comment that over and over and over I hear questions asked from the community of what does security do? This is what security does. It's important for the community to understand all of these quote-unquote minor incidents that security is there and responding and providing service to the community.
Thank you. I appreciate that comment. Many times we are there before anybody else as well. We're there before the fire department. We're there before anybody else. So our officers end up taking action, which does help, whether it's first aid or just keeping the peace or what have you.
Okay. All right. Then moving a little bit farther down the agenda, you have the rule violation citations by CSD. Again, these are RMA or CSD's records of RMA rule violations. Is there any comment, discussion on that, Chief?
No.
Okay. So that's in the packet stated for February. Are there any questions, comments on those items? Okay, in this particular packet, we do not yet have, and what we have in the past done is included information from from RMA. We're still trying to reconcile that information, so it's not included in this board packet. Again, it's because of reporting time differences. I do note, I want to make a note that there is a statement or is a document in the packet that talks about Rancho Murrieta Community Services District most common RMA rule violation sections enforced by RMCSD Security Department. We're in the process of reviewing that and coordinating that with RMA to make sure that that list is appropriate, it's still appropriate, and any items that RMA does not want CSD involved in, we can eliminate those items. Any other comments? Okay, moving on then to item A4, discuss possible amendments to District Code Chapter 21. Just go ahead.
Yeah, so again, last meeting I called out Amelia on this and thanked her, and it is her fault. She did all the good work on this. In accordance with board action that was a few months back where the percent for late fees was increased, that necessitated the documented change to reflect that increase in mm-hmm. our codes. In this particular case, it was a security code. So as Amelia was going through the security code to add that change, she noticed that it was just cluttered with a lot of old Footnotes. Footnotes and comments and edits and changes that were reflected on the pages that didn't need to be there anymore, and it really made it cluttered. So Amelia worked on updating it, editing that out. We sent that to legal, who added some comments and edits, and then a final version was produced. At the last security committee meeting, that was brought forward along with a recommended action to the board to adopt the changes, which would then necessitate an ordinance, and that process. During the committee meeting, a comment was made which brought this back to this committee meeting and not before the board. And it's under Section 3, under Scope of Security Services, which are found on page 5 of the Security Code. And Director Mabee had made the comment, and I'll read the section first. It was authority and scope of services and pursuant to section, and it names the section of the government code and authorized the local agency formation commission. The district provides security services necessary to protect lives and property within the boundaries of the district. The question was, if security operates as observe and report, that the language protect lives and property should be remaining in the code or not. So it was brought back for further discussion. The general manager and I had a discussion about why we believe that was in there, and so I sent an email to our legal, who researched it and wrote correspondence back. And in essence, in summary, that language is directly quoted out of the government code section cited in here. It's not CSD or the board didn't create this language. It took the language verbatim from the government code. And actually, if you look at the government code section, it says the special districts may have their own police department, fire department, or security services for the purposes of protecting life and property within the boundaries of their district. That's what it says. So the language is in there. The comment comes up, well, security is observe and report. That is true, but I think the understanding of what observe and report is may not be totally understood. Because we get everything from, you can't write an RMA ticket because you're observe and report. You're not allowed to do anything. What that means is, under California law, because we operate under the Bureau of Security and Investigative Services licensing, all our officers are licensed through that state office, that security is not compelled to make arrests or intervene in criminal acts as law enforcement is compelled. However, security may, security is restricted by their company policies, or in this case, board directive or policies that says that we are encouraged to observe and report. However, we, if necessary, can make an arrest. The protecting of life and property, I think, is also an expectation and a duty that I know all of us feel that we have. I think the expectation in the community is, if something is really bad going to happen, I want you there to protect my family or me or whomever. There has been cases where we have come across people with weapons. We have had officers threatened with weapons. Although it's rare, it does occur. So further, if that language was removed from the code, it doesn't take away from what the government code, which is law, says and does or covers the district or the officers in their duties.
Okay. And I think it was at the last security meeting, it was raised as a question with that, with the uncertainty of the language. And you just explained the certainty of the language, and so we appreciate that. And that's now in the proposed it remains within section 3.01 of the proposed changes to chapter 21 district code. Is there any public comment?
I'm listening to the government code, which I dealt with a lot. I really need to see what the general manager wrote to the attorney, because I believe the government code is also matched up with the penal code. And I think, in my opinion, just what I've heard,
I'm not quite sure the authority applies, because I think it's specific to law enforcement versus security enforcement.
Which part?
The part that you're leaving the security code, the government code is justifying leaving that section into the stuff. So I really need to see what Mr. Martin wrote to the attorney to interpret if you guys have this, have the interpretation right. I believe there's a difference, because there needs to be a penal code or a law allowing the extension of the authority from the government code to apply to security in the special district. The language, I believe, in the district says police off the district may have a police, they may have a police department inside the district. So I know you're shaking your head, Les.
No, I'm recalling what you said last meeting.
I think you need to see the written comment to Dick Shanahan of what the question, you know, how you're interpreting the question before you should apply it to the security stuff. Because I think you're getting teetered into more law enforcement authority, and you're using the government code to give you that protection, which I'm not quite sure I agree with. But I need to see how the question was asked to the legal attorney, so it applies. I think independently, the district has taken some steps with firearms and that kind of stuff there. And it's always been challenging the community, expanding the authority of security versus what the authority is. So now you're quoting government court that gives you the protection in the section. And I'd like to see, I think we should.
Would you like me to read the quote from the attorney out the letter? I have it here.
As long as you're not saying it's not public. But if you apply for an email, I think you need to see how the whole question is written, you know, that kind of stuff. But I think that needs to be part of the community conversation before you adopt the code. Because I think in the last meeting, this is
in the code. This is existing language that's been in the code.
We're actually recommending
that it remain as is.
And I think, was it Director Mabee that I heard right, was the one that questioned the comment should be in there because of security versus law enforcement, right?
It's not so much security versus law enforcement. It's a matter of not restricting ourselves solely to observe and report. And that is what Chief Werblin was speaking to, that in the event that there's a machete attack or something like that, that it's clear, at least in our code, that we are authorized to take action at that point if there's a threat to life.
I think everybody has the right to protect themselves. I'm not quite sure I agree with you in the way you interpret that question. So I'd like to see how the question is being asked legally and see it applied, because in the past, the security thing has tried to become police officers, and the community totally had a difference of opinion about what the authority should be, and it's been debated for many, many years.
It's not the intent of the district to go in that direction.
Well, I like to see the legal. I think I'd like to see the legal question. I asked it. You're going to put it in the government code in the section. I think we have the ability to see if
again, it's been in there since the code was adopted.
I understand, but the first.
So we're not changing anything.
Well, I think it got challenged. So if that's your stance, that there's no, that you have the authority, that's something different, that you don't need to show me the stuff. But it definitely needs to be, you know, asked legally to Dick Shanahan in an open meeting and that kind of stuff, how that stuff works. So I'm not quite sure I agree with you. And I have a lot of experience with government code and penal code in my career. I'm retired now, but I don't really, I'm a little confused on it. Because I do hire more. So, thank you.
Okay, so that question has been noted. Are there any other comments? I'll make a couple of comments and thoughts. That particular item is under current question, all right? If the language was modified to include a tone that said security services that may protect lives and property rather than is necessary to protect lives and property. We just heard a report of a number of instances where security people were there protecting lives and property. If we were to eliminate that section of the code or that language, is it the intent of the commenters that the service no longer be provided to the district? And it's just a question. Okay, and so we're interested in making sure that we're compliant with the law, we want to make sure that we're providing the services that that the district security special tax was originally founded upon.
I have one more comment. So the government code you're talking about is section 6100, right?
61100, yes, J.
J. And part of the section J says, provide police protection and law enforcement services by establishing and operating the police department that employs peace officers pursuant to chapter 4.5, commencing with section 830 of Title III of Part II of the Penal Code. So if you're telling me that it matches your service, your duties match the Penal Code, and that was the question that I asked, the government code is for a broad scope of a code, but it's got to match with the Penal Code when they start talking about protection of life and providing different services. So I believe you had it in the code. It's the first time somebody's caught it or read it. But you need to ask, the lawyer needs to be asked, is it specific to security versus police departments? The government code, the penal code, it references the penal code. So the question I'm asking Mr. Martin is, when you asked the question at Shanahan, did you bring up the penal code? Does it connect to the penal code and gives you the authority? You have the ability to protect your own lives, but if you start acting like a police department, that's a little bit different because your insurances and everything's going to change.
We can confirm that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the question has been noted. Are there any other comments, questions? As this is a comprehensive update of the security code, what my recommendation would be is that we allow staff time to answer those specific questions that have been posed by the public, and then consider any amendments to that particular section that are required as a result of that inquiry, and then move forward. If there's, does it have to come back to security committee again?
We'd bring it back to security committee.
There's no rush on this change, so yeah. let's do that. That's the recommendation. Give staff time to research the particulars that were just raised, and then move on. Okay, and thank you for those comments. Moving on then to item A5, discuss alignment of monthly statistical charts.
One question Director Mabee had is, in the security reports you have the monthly numbers, stat charts that I produce, and then if we receive them on time, RMAs are also included in the packet. And if it's necessary to have what essentially amounts to four or five charts included in the packet for monthly reporting, that was the question he asked.
Okay.
If I am to give a response to that, the only comment I can make, and it has been discussed at past meetings, whether it be board or committee, is RMA has their own process to produce their documents, their own time frames. The only thing I can speak to is to the accuracy and validity of the reports that I produce for our reporting purposes.
Okay, and I think the intent in including those RMA statistics was to make sure that there was some continued coordination, collaboration between RMA compliance and RMCSD security. And so that's the reason that the attempt is being made to include both of those reports and learn from them and determine whether or not the services are compatible. So, and cover any issues that are, you know, coming up between the two separate agencies. So, I think it's probably a good idea for us to continue that effort. I'm not sure that we need to publish those combined statistics, but we just want to make sure that we're still receiving them and listening or you know, comprehending the comments that are received from those. So those are my only comments, and I don't think we need to belabor that process, and I really don't think we need to have a combined published statement, but we want to make sure that we're listening to what RMA's stats are in relation to what ours are. Okay. Any other comments on that item? Okay, item A6, discuss districts automatic external defibrillators.
So I don't recall what exact topic was that brought this up. I know, but it did create a discussion on automatic defibrillators and if they're in the community, if they're being used, if they're at the country club, and if CSD has them or why CSD does not. At that time, I had commented that in one of our training sessions through our insurance provider with an instructor here, I asked direct firsthand to the instructor, why don't we have AEDs here? Why don't we use them? And the response was, it's not recommended because there could be potential liability or exposure to the district. It wasn't brought up again until last committee meeting. So Tom Hennig reached out to our representative with the insurance company, excuse me, then I got on the speakerphone, and as it is now, our insurance company says, as long as we do certain things, there is no increased exposure or liability to the district to have the devices that many of the government entities that they work with have AEDs and are utilized and available to be utilized by staff in case of an emergency. My personal opinion is they work, they're good to have. We can experience some increased response time with medical emergency services here in the community or the district. Mm-hmm. We did receive some documentation from the insurance company on, it's basically a checklist that if you're going to implement them, these are the things you need to do, which includes training. Now we do have upcoming, for example, our upcoming CPR first aid training. Most training courses, especially if they're sponsored through American Heart Association or follow their curriculum, it's CPR, first aid, AED. And it's a separate training section on utilizing the device, how you apply it, how you utilize it, and that's actually on your first aid CPR card. So it shows that you've had training. That's all that's required, is that there's a policy, which isn't complicated or very long, and that the person utilizing it has training. There's also protections under Good Samaritan laws that if you've had the training, just like doing CPR, you don't outstep the boundaries of what you were taught, meaning you don't give somebody a tracheotomy or thoracotomy because you think you saw it on TV, but as long as you stick to CPR and the person dies, the family can't sue you, okay? AEDs are protected under the Good Samaritan law. So it's back before committee to decide if the district wants to move forward looking into AEDs. There's a cost involved, they're expensive machines. Then the recommendation or the thing would be, well, how many? Do we place one in this building? Do we put one in each patrol car? As a first responder, I said earlier, many times we're there before the fire department. So these are all things that have now evolved out of that discussion at the last committee meeting. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, my thoughts go along with the questions that you just rhetorically asked, and that is the cost, all right? If they are very expensive, that's a concern to the district in spending the public's money, recognizing that they would necessarily be funded through the special tax that funds security services. Since that tax fund does not pay for the total amount of cost for the district providing security services, it would necessarily shift to some other fund to pay for it. So that's a concern. Ongoing training, is there an additional cost to ongoing training beyond?
Like $5,000. Every 2 years with CPR certification, renewal.
And a cost associated with that? And is this elective for individual staff?
Well, that would be a policy of the district to, if mm-hmm. now they're, okay, for example, to answer the first part of your question, it's included in the CPR training. Through our insurance carrier, it's part of what we pay for. So the training we're having next week is what we do every 2 years. It's part of the service they provide to us as, you know, a client, mm-hmm. insurance provider relationship. Some agencies have a policy that say, within this building, for example, if there's key personnel that are designated, trained in the use of, only they will deploy the machine while auxiliary staff may be calling 911 to get emergency services, keep people back, these type of things in a supportive role. So that would all be drafted into the policy if the district went that way.
Okay, and then, you know, a third question is, we already have agencies, the fire department, that already have this equipment and that training. So the question is, because they're very, very close, and I understand your statement that often patrol officers are on scene prior to the fire department, is there, you know, what is the need driving this consideration? If it were just mobile units that were with the patrol officers, we have two patrol officers, would that be one or two machines? And that's a question would have to be discussed. And you know, if we offered the training to our personnel for them to make a determination of whether or not they could more appropriately call and recommend that type of a machine be on site from the fire department, if that would help rather than having the machine ourselves. So those are some of the questions that I would generate, and I think it's probably something that ought to be considered through a couple of additional security committee meetings, and then brought to the board, and with specific identification of what the total costs might be to the district, so that we have better information. And again, looking at the funding sources. Those are my comments. Are there any other comments? Staff, public? Yes.
I like your comments, but
my initial reaction seems like a no-brainer to get them. But on the other hand, listen to this. We live so close to the fire stations. Would we even use them before the firemen get there or the ambulance gets there? Mm-hmm. So my, after thinking about it, I don't think you ought to buy them. You know? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to use them because the fire station is so close. Yeah. The price, I don't know what the price is.
But right.
And even if justify the price, probably not going to use them, and the training. So my initial reaction is no brain to get them, because then on the hand.
Right.
You know, why? Yep. I don't think so. But that's just
okay, fine. Those are aligned with my comments. Yes. Any other comments? You're free to comment if you'd like.
I don't have to say my two cents.
You bet.
Well, and your name, ma'am?
Oh, Beverly Battalion.
Hello.
Hi. Anyway, I retired from the Governor's Office of Emergency Services last year, and I was trained on how to use an AED, which is very simple. It goes through the whole process with you. She tells you, do this, do that. I was on jury duty in San Luis Obispo, and I was standing in line going through the metal detector, and the gentleman in front of me had a heart attack. Well, they grabbed the AED, and they were able to resuscitate him right there and save his life. Now, I know we have a fire station, but I really think that having an AED in a building, especially since I live in a senior community, you know, in the clubhouse, if somebody did have a heart attack before the firemen could get there, it would be very easy to use the AED. I mean, I've done the first aid training and the AED training, and believe me, and that is so simple to use, because the voice tells you, okay, open it up, press the button, do the, you know, I mean,
okay. Anybody
can do it. Anyway, that's,
all right.
And I know it's not cheap, but if it can save a life,
right. What's
that worth?
Well, thank you for that input. I would also ask the question of the district staff to determine the number of and the location of, the planned location of those devices, all right? It's probably not going to be in the village clubhouse. If there's one currently at the fire station, And I would doubt that the district would fund AEDs in other general locations, RMA building, Rancho Marietta Community, the Country Club, things like that. So where would, you know, how many and where would the district's owned AEDs be located? Okay. All right, any other comments on that item? Moving on then to item number 7, discuss letter from Marietta Village regarding security cameras.
So this is an informational item. This is going to come forward at the board meeting this month on the 18th, and that's where the document will be provided and also a discussion with the full board. Just wanted to acknowledge that we did receive a letter from the Marietta Village board supporting the concept of a camera, security camera, at the entrance to the village, and along with some other comments and requests as part of that. So I'll just leave it at that, but we will be discussing it at the board meeting this month.
Okay. All right, any comments on that item? You're getting your exercise today.
Yes, I'm not sure this is directly involved, but in a meeting or two back, there was talk about increasing the retention of the videotapes. Has anything come of that?
We have investigated it. It is there's a number of different options, from 3 months to 6 months to a year. All of them have quite a hefty price tag, and so we are still evaluating probably one of the lower cost options, and that would be likely what we would proceed with if we were to proceed with an expansion of that. Just to frame it for everyone in the audience, the issue is, you know, some months the amount of retention of videos is related to literally the storage on the hard drives that we have. So the question has arisen, well, is it 3 months, is it 2 months? It actually depends on how much video is taken. Mm-hmm. It's motion activated, and so that it's variable, I guess is how I would put it. So sometimes it could be 2 months, 3 months, it just depends. So if we want to expand it beyond to its current capability, it requires multiple terabytes of space and the other ancillary hardware required to direct that and manage those files and such. So we are still looking into it.
Okay. Yeah. I did send you an email. I raised a few questions on that. You know, what is the purpose of these videos? And currently, they're retained for something like 30 to 45 days. My question is, why would you ever want to retain it longer than that? I mean, talking about a year, yeah, you're recording me every time I enter or leave the village on foot, or on my car, or on my bicycle. And I understand why you might want to do that for 30 days or maybe 45 days, but at the same time, it is an invasion of my privacy. And when you're talking about retaining it for a year, I want to know why. What are you going to do with it? I want to know, not just me, but why would you ever want to retain it for a year? I've heard some people say a few things, but they just don't make sense. You know, people are away from their home for 6 months and somebody breaks in, but you're not going to be able to look at that video and determine anything from that.
Okay.
Another thing, I was researching this a little bit. I found something very interesting about license plate readers, that there's actually a law, state California law, that requires you to have policies regarding that, have hearings determine what those policies are, and you've got to have those policies on your website. If you'd like to hear, that is Title 1.81.23.
Richard, can you say that again? Title what?
Title 1.81.23. Yes.
In a of section, what code?
It's Civil Code. It's section 1798.90.5. There is one little question on whether that applies to you, but I think it does.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just one question for you. What do those license plate readers do? And they read the license plate, they extract the number from it, I assume? It's not just a picture it extracts.
Well, in order for me to accurately answer your question, I would have to ask you a question.
Okay.
Are you, so when you're referring to license plate readers, are you referring to the ones operated by law enforcement that actually reads the plate and then tells you who owns the car? Or are you talking about what we have at the gate? Because they are completely two different systems, two different purposes, and you're talking about one utilized by the government, which operates completely different than what we have.
No, I'm strictly...
So that's my question to you.
Yeah, I'm strictly talking about what's used at the gate.
At the gate?
Proposed at.
It doesn't tie into anything. All it does is capture the license plate as a still photo.
A picture, still photo.
Correct.
It doesn't look at that photo and extract the number and...
Not automatically.
No, it's a still photo.
Okay.
That's then recorded, you know, saved on the hard drive.
Okay.
It's not tied into anything. We don't have access to any kind of database.
So if you typed into your computer some particular license plate number, would something pop up?
There is a way that we could try to use the camera to see if that plate came through the gate at a certain day and time, but it's not always accurate. It doesn't always, in other words, you won't get a return because it may not read the plate right. But there is a way that you could look at that and see if that plate, now again, remember the picture's taken as it goes right through the gate, so all it's going to tell you is the date and time that picture was taken.
Right.
That's all it's going to tell you.
Okay. That's the answer?
Yes. The reason I ask you the question is, this law applies actually if you're storing the number, not just storing the picture, but storing the number or something like that.
Right. I understand.
Okay.
All right. You've given us the reference. Thank you very much for your questions. Are there any other comments on that item? Again, reminder that that will be at an item on our regular board agenda on the 18th. Is that correct? 18th?
Yes.
18th.
Correct.
18th. Okay. All right, item number 8, Joint Security Committee meeting update.
We covered that earlier.
Okay.
That the agenda's in draft form now under review.
I understand. Are there any other questions, comments on that? We're still working on the draft agenda, and that is being mutually composed by the attendees.
Correct. They submitted ideas and all that's being compiled.
Okay, again, that's just public information. So, okay, thank you. Then, moving on, director and staff comments. Staff, any other comments?
Just a reminder for those who have been here at prior meetings where we started discussions on security fees, that in the prior fee study that was generated in 1998 that justified the Measure J, that discussion has been moved over to our finance committee. So those that are interested in that topic, I recommend you attend our finance and monitor our agendas for the finance committee.
All right. Okay.
Richard, we'll get you a wireless mic.
At the finance committee meeting, I think it was John mentioned that that study was recently put on the website, and I went looking for it. I wasn't sure what I was looking for. Could you?
If you go to, on the top left, if you go to services provided,
okay,
down to security,
okay,
security forms and publications.
Okay.
And then you scroll down and it says Measure J.
Measure J. Okay.
Measure J.
Yeah. Okay.
There's
I saw that. Yeah. Okay. I saw that. It didn't ring any bells.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Okay. I do not have any director comments. So without objection, then we will call the meeting adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.